with the Butler Radio News Skill and then say, Alexa, what's in the news? Dave Malarkey's up next with It's Your Turn.
And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program today. It's the Monday edition. Pretty gloomy day, although I did see the sun pop out for about 2 minutes mid-morning today. And I mean, that's about all it was. A patch of blue sky up there. It was like kind of like being up in a plane, you know, where you come up above the clouds. Oh, there's blue and sun. And then it went away. Yeah, pretty dreary day. We got some rain, much-needed rain overnight. Rain most of the overnight, didn't it? Yeah. And we could get another shower or two today. We see a few things that are crossing the area. They're pretty light, and nothing compared to the steady rains that we had overnight. So we'll see. A good idea to keep the umbrella handy, I guess, if you're going to be outside for any length of time. The big thing is the temperature. It's so warm. You know, this is the second week of October. And you know what the normal high is for Butler on this day? Average high? Normal high? 64. Yeah, 64. And we've got 72 right now. So really, really warm. And it was 70 almost all the overnight, too. Very strange weather. But hey, it's been strange since the beginning of the summer. Right? Yeah. We had a whole lot of rain early. And then we ended up with no rain for a month and a half. And the month of September, you know, I never saw, maybe somebody did, I never saw any statistics for September in terms of temperature. And I think that's because the month ended over a weekend. But I'm sure that some of the weather folks had it. It had to be one of the warmest Septembers on record, don't you think? I mean, it had to be. In the last week of September, we were 88, 89, 90 degrees every day. I don't know. I missed it if they ever announced the average high for the month. You know, had to be really warm. Open talk to begin the program today. Phone number is 283-2525. 283-2525. We have guests later on the program. We're going to be talking with Joe Navarro today. He's the author of... It's a fascinating book. It's called 3 Minutes to Doomsday, An Agent, a Traitor, and the Worst Espionage Breach in U.S. History. You know, we had another espionage breach last week. They've become rather commonplace. And we had the whole WikiLeaks thing with Assange last year. Yeah. Well, this is a true story. It reads like a novel. But it's true. And Joe Navarro is a former special agent with the FBI. He'll tell the story for us coming up a little bit later on the program today. We'll also be talking about type 2 diabetes in kids, which until recently was unheard of. I mean, there were children with diabetes, but it was, you know, what's known as type 1 diabetes. It used to be called juvenile diabetes. They don't use that term anymore. But now we're finding out and we're hearing about more and more kids with type 2 diabetes, which used to be known as adult onset diabetes. So why are kids getting it? Well, we'll talk about that with guest Faith Thomas, who will be with us a little bit later on the program today. So that's the lineup of guests we have a little bit later, but open talk to begin with. 283-2525, the number, 283-2525. Today is Columbus Day. In case you've been waiting for the mailman, he or she is not coming today. No mail delivery. You know, I was thinking about this, and I don't have any particular envy. I mean, I don't mind coming to work. I love coming to work. It's my job. I love it. But who's off today? That's what I was thinking. Because, you know, stores are open today, right? So all retail people are working. Restaurants are open today. So all of the restaurant folks are working. Obviously, emergency crews, fire, police, they're all working. I don't know, and this I need help on. I don't know whether the schools still have Columbus Day off. Is that still a holiday? Do you know, Pat, you had a son in school not too long ago? I'm trying to think. I think when I was a kid, it was a holiday, a school holiday. I could be wrong. A long time ago. In elementary school. I don't think in many school districts it's a holiday these days. I think it's just a regular school day. Yeah. So who's off today? Government. If you work in a government office, you're off today, right? And that's really, it's about it. I mean, even the state stores are open now. It didn't used to be, but they're open today. So government employees, and by the way, not all, most. Some local governmental offices are open today, but most are closed. All state and federal governmental offices are closed today. And most county offices are closed today. Butler County Courthouse, government offices closed today, courts. But about it, you know. So, I mean, God bless you if you work for the government and you got a day off. I don't begrudge you that. That's terrific. But what do these holidays mean anymore when almost everybody's working? Right? Yeah. I don't know what the percentage is. It has to be the vast majority of people are working. If you work at AK Steel, you're at work today. If you're at work at Sonneborn, or Oberg, or Penn United Technologies, you're working today, right? Yeah. 283-2525 is the number, 283-2525. I don't know about all the controversy on Columbus Day. You know, there are some cities that have replaced Columbus Day with Indigenous Peoples Day. No, I don't know. I mean, when you look at it, Columbus didn't discover America to begin with. Number one, he made four voyages to the New World. Never once did Columbus set foot on mainland North America. Never. Not Florida, not nowhere. North America. His first trip went to the Bahamas. I think he was in Cuba. It was down toward the South American coast. And he did discover America anyway. There were people living here. Maybe he was the first Italian to get here, and I'm not even sure he was the first European, if you count Leif Erikson and some of those other guys. 283-2525 is the number. Open talk on the program today. Hi, caller. Happy Columbus Day. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you. Wanata High School is closed.
Oh, they have a holiday today?
Okay. Yes.
So, let me write that down here.
Not the high school, it's the whole Wanata school district.
The whole district, yeah, yeah. Okay, well, good for them. When I was a kid, Columbus Day was the real Columbus Day. Do you remember that?
Yes.
October the 12th.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and it wasn't too long ago, maybe 10 years ago, there was a certain student that took upon himself to go on strike because of the fact that they had school. And after that, it seemed like it was a big controversy to have school or not.
Wow, I missed that story. I didn't hear about that.
Yeah.
Well, to be honest with you, to give kids a day off school if they're working hard, that doesn't bother me because right now we're, what, about halfway between the start of school and Thanksgiving, right? Approximately.
Correct.
So,
yeah.
You know, that's a good time to take a day. There hasn't been a holiday since Labor Day, so okay. I don't have any problems with that.
But they have more holidays than we ever had. We just went to school and got out early.
Well, for us, it was October 12th. They hadn't changed the Congress, in its infinite wisdom, had not yet changed Columbus Day to a Monday. So it was always on October the 12th, which, after all, is the date on which Columbus sighted land, you know.
Yeah.
Thanks.
One other thing I wanted to share with you. We just got back from Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And if you went there, gas price, you better hold on your hat because their gas price is $2.07.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Well, ours was up pretty close to $3. I don't know what it is. I need to get gas today, but I haven't gotten it in a week and a half or so. So
I guess 270 something.
I would guess between 270 and 280. I don't know exactly what it is.
Okay.
Thanks, my friend.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
So there's one school district that's off today, Monetaw. Yeah, Monetaw. I'm pretty sure when I was a kid, Columbus Day was a holiday. I know we got two in February, because when I was in elementary school, you got Washington. First, you got Lincoln's birthday, and then you got Washington's birthday. Lincoln's birthday, February 12th. Washington's birthday, February 22nd. Right? Not anymore. There isn't any Lincoln's birthday anymore. Well, it's still there, but not a holiday anywhere that I know of. And Washington's birthday has been moved to a Monday, and they, not only that, they changed the name to President's Day, or at least unofficially, it's now known as President's Day. And, you know, if there was ever going to be a holiday to mark any great figure in American history, don't you think it would be George Washington? After all, I mean, if anybody in American history deserves a national holiday, I think it'd be pretty hard to argue against George Washington. But he doesn't even have one anymore. Well, the federal government still claims it's Washington's birthday. Nobody calls it that. Nobody has that on the calendar. President's Day. Yeah. But anyway, back to Columbus. It's a holiday that's celebrated a lot by people of Italian ethnic heritage. And that's terrific. I saw an article, I think it was in yesterday's paper, the Sunday paper. I've had a busy day, and I didn't much get through the Sunday paper. In fact, I barely got started on it. But I recall the headline, it went something like, Italians deserve a better holiday than Columbus. I didn't get to read the article. I will put it in a stack to get to a little bit later. But, you know, if you recognize that Columbus wasn't perfect, none of our figures of history were perfect. We learned about them when we were kids as if they were demigods. They all had their faults. And Columbus did take slaves, took slaves for display back home and to work in his conquered lands, so not so good. And there was the spread of diseases from Europe that the indigenous peoples in the United States had no, they'd never been exposed to them, so there was widespread death from that because there was no immunity, you know. But that happened with a lot of other explorers, too. It wasn't just Columbus. Mm. So I don't know. If you recognize that there were good points and bad points, I don't think you have to, can't paint with too broad a brush. I mean, pretty famous, yeah. What about Amerigo Vespucci? That might be a better man of history for Italians and ethnic Italians to celebrate. Definitely Italian, Amerigo Vespucci. And after all, that's where we get the name of our country from. America. It comes from America, from his first name, America. Funny that they took his first name to name the continent, Otherwise, we would be living in North Vespucci, and then there would be South Vespucci, down where Argentina and Brazil are, instead of North America and South America. 283-2525 is our number, 283-2525, open talk on the program today. A quick mention of a name that some people might recognize, some might not. Well, that's a man that died about 10 years ago. The late Joe Rosenthal. Does that name ring a bell with you, Pat Parker? Joe Rosenthal. Joe Rosenthal. He was a photographer, combat photographer in World War II. He took one of the most famous pictures of the war, arguably one of the two or three most famous pictures of World War II. U.S. Marines raising the flag atop Mount Suribachi on Iwo Jima. Joe Rosenthal took that picture. Today would have been his birthday. He was born October 9th, 1911. He lived a long life. He was well into his 90s when he died about 10 years ago. He was an interesting guy. I was reading a little bit about him today. He was not an official U.S. Army photographer. He was rejected because of poor eyesight. He wore glasses. So the Army... The Army wouldn't take him on. He was hired by the Associated Press. He was a journalist and served in a number of other areas in World War II. He wasn't just in the Pacific. He was in the British Isles. He was in North Africa and so on and so forth, a lot of places. But he was on Iwo Jima at the right time. And it's interesting, you know the picture we're talking about, folks? It was turned into a statue. It's about six Marines, six or seven of them, I don't know how many exactly, but they had affixed a large American flag to a pipe, and they were in the process of pushing it up and setting it in a pile of rocks atop this mountain, Mount Suribachi in Iwo Jima. It was the fourth day of the Americans having arrived at Iwo Jima. It was a bloody, bloody battle. Horrible losses. And here's the funny thing that I was reading about Rosenthal today. The Marines had actually put up an earlier flag. It was a small one. And they'd stuck it into the ground up there. And they decided that they needed a bigger one. So they got this huge flag and they were, you know, given the orders to take that little one down and put this big one up. And Joe Rosenthal happened to be there at the right time with his camera. And took the picture that's burned into most everybody's mind. The statue of all these Marines putting that flag in the ground sits at the entrance to the main U.S. Marine base in Quantico, Virginia. It's right along, I-95 used to be U.S. 1, and it's actually right on U.S. 1. I've seen it. Quite a sight. It's gargantuan, by the way. Right at the entrance. So that's the guy that took the picture. Joe Rosenthal. Won the Pulitzer Prize for that picture, and rightly so. That picture, and probably the one of the Navy guy kissing the nurse in the Times Square in New York. Not a combat picture, but a celebration of the end of the war. That's probably the other most famous picture from World War II. 283-2525 is our number, 283-2525, open talk. By the way, there's some copies of that statue of the Marines on Suribachi. It's in other places around the country, too, but the original is at Quantico. Hi, caller, this is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn. Nice to have you with us today.
It's always great to be part of the commentary.
Oh, cool.
Over the weekend, I read a column by Fareed Zakaria, and I think he's a pretty... I think he does his homework as far as getting information and checking his facts before he writes anything.
I know of him. He used to write for Time magazine. He may still do it. I don't get... time anymore, but I know the man. I mean, I know his writing.
And anyhow, the what he wrote over the weekend was about mental illness and the shooter from Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
He was immediately labeled sick. with lots of mental problems. And even though we know he was very evil, we don't know that he was also mentally ill. There's no real evidence of that to this point. Now, of course, there's more to come. We have lots of investigation to do. But part of that was also that gun deaths generally,
mm-hmm.
and the rate of gun deaths in the United States compared to lots of other places. He specifically chose Great Britain. We have 40 times the rate of gun deaths in the United States over Great Britain. We have 15 times more guns than Great Britain per capita, far fewer restrictions, and we don't have 40 times the mental health issues of Great Britain. But that's what we're we're using a broad brush to tell these folks who've done these horrible mass shootings that it's because of their mental incapacity.
I have seen a story to that effect, that we have to be careful about making a distinction between someone who's evil and someone who's mentally deranged. I think he may have been commenting on President Trump's message, where he called him totally evil and mentally deranged, and he said they're not the same thing. He said this guy, there's no evidence that this guy was mentally ill. Obviously, there's evidence that he was evil.
Right.
Yeah.
The other thing that I read in that particular piece is the similarities between gun ownership rates in particular states and the higher the states with higher gun ownership and lower gun ownership, and what the huge difference in gun-related shootings is between those states. The highest gun-related death rates: Alaska, Wyoming, Montana, and Arkansas. And the lowest gun-related deaths: New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Rhode Island. And it's specifically related to gun ownership.
Hmm.
So there are people who own guns that just really should not.
Appreciate the call, my friend. Always good to talk with you.
Thank you very much, Dave.
Sure. So long. 283-2525 is our number. It's Open Talk. Caller, thanks for your patience in waiting. This is Dave Mullarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn. You're on the air.
Dave, in regard to the schools, I do know that Center Township does not have school, and they're in the Butler area. So I would say Butler area schools are closed.
Sounds like it. That's two of them, Montauk and Butler area. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, then.
Thanks. Did you have school on Columbus Day when you were in school?
No.
I don't think I did either. It's a long time ago for both of us, obviously, but I can't remember. I know we had Lincoln's birthday and Washington's birthday off for sure. I'm not sure about Columbus Day.
Okay.
Thanks, my friend. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Sure. Of course, back in our day, Columbus Day sometimes fell on a weekend. It was October the 12th. It didn't matter if that was a Saturday or a Sunday. If it fell on a Saturday or Sunday, it was tough beans, you know. The government offices were already closed, so they didn't move it, at least to the best of my knowledge. When it fell on a weekend, it fell on a weekend. Just like Christmas. Yeah, just like Christmas. Reminds me to check. Is it this year? No, it was last year that Christmas was on a weekend. Last year. Oh, Sunday, I think, last year, wasn't it? Yeah. In case you're wondering, Christmas this year is on a Monday. Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve are on Sunday. But now, of course, whenever a holiday falls on a weekend, we shift it. We shift it to the closest Friday or the closest Monday so that we have a long weekend. Wow, that's good. 283-2525 is the number, so we know of two school districts that are closed today. Monotau and Butler area. Anybody know anybody else that's closed today? And it's just like fall break or something. I mean, I don't know, they have a special lesson on Columbus last Friday. When they come back tomorrow, a special lesson plan on Columbus. I don't know. 283-2525 is the number. All I know is that stupid poem that we learned way back when still sticks with me. In 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. Pretty easy to remember the first voyage of Columbus, first date. Although one of the superintendents, you know, a couple of weeks ago we were chatting with, oh gosh, most all the superintendents in our region, in the various school districts. And I'm trying to think which gentleman it was. I think it was up in Carn City. I'm not sure now. A couple of weeks ago, we talked to a lot of them. But he said there's not that emphasis on memorizing dates and stuff anymore. Why? Kids can get that at the drop of a hat. You know, like if they need to know the date of Columbus's first voyage, they can look it up in 3 seconds. You know, on your iPhone or your iPad or your tablet or whatever, laptop. So why waste time learning those dates? I suppose you could make an argument for that. I still think you should know a few of them, though, don't you? Right? I mean, that, you know, basis of American history. Pilgrims and the Puritans arriving in New England, 1620. Plymouth Rock, right? Were they the first English settlers? No! Jamestown, 1607, right? Pat Parker's looking at me like I just stepped out of the research room at the library. Did he memorize these dates? 1607, John Smith, Pocahontas. 1620, Pilgrims, Plymouth Rock, right? 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. So why did October 12th used to be Columbus Day? It's not anymore, but because that's the day that land was sighted. So, you know, they had the guy that was up in the crow's nest on whatever the lead ship was that day. The Pinta, the Nina, the Santa Maria. So he's, you know, rubbing his eyeballs, and he says, "Land ho!" And Christopher Columbus is down on the deck. He's going crazy, going bonkers. "It's India! It's India! It's India!" That's why October 12th was Columbus Day. It was a day that Columbus made landfall in the New World, not in what we now know as North America, nowhere in the United States. He was on one of the islands in the Bahamas. And they're still not sure which one, for certain. All the evidence points to an island that's now called San Salvador. And although most historians agree on that, it's not ironclad, but they think that's where it was. And then Columbus sailed around a little bit more, yada, yada, yada. One of the ships sank. I haven't read up on this in some time. One of the ships sank. These were little ships, by the way. Tiny. If you'd see one, sailed up to Pittsburgh a couple of years ago. Remember that? It might even have been last year. It was within the last couple of years. It was a replica of one of them. I don't remember which one. But that was the first thing that everyone said. They tied it up down there by the sub, you know, down by Carnegie Science Center. And everybody said, "Oh my gosh, what a tiny boat to start off into uncharted waters." Columbus actually made 4 voyages to the New World, that I remember. He touched on some other islands. I think he hit what we now know as Hispaniola, maybe Cuba. course, none of these were named that back in those days. And I think he either touched on the coast of South America or maybe an island off the coast. He was down in that direction on one of those trips, too. And then sailed back to Spain. I assume he went back to Spain because it was Ferdinand and Isabella that, gave the money to make the trip. It wasn't Italy. Although he was Italian from Genoa, he had to finance his trip from Spain, the King and Queen of Spain. Columbus Day, 2017. 283-2525 is our number. Open talk on the program today, 283-2525. We need to pause for a quick break. One message, and then we'll be back. A bit more open talk time. I want to ask you about, if anybody remembers, and I did not, I'd never heard of this local magazine before called The Butlerite, but an acquaintance of mine was going through some of her stuff and found, I don't know, 5 or 6 issues of this magazine and said, Dave, you might be interested in these. So we'll talk about it when we come back. 283-2525, our number. Later on the program today, Joe Navarro, 3 minutes to Doomsday. The story of an agent, a traitor, and the worst espionage breach in U.S. history. True story. Written by Joe Navarro, former special agent with the FBI. So he'll be with us a little bit later on the program today. We'll also be talking about diabetes in kids, young kids, little kids. Faith Thomas talks about that later on the program today. A quick break and back with more of the Monday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR right after this.
Know the capital of Latvia? Well, why not put your trivia knowledge to the test and help a great cause at the same time at Connecting to Tomorrow's Trivia Night on Saturday, October 21st. Doors open at 6 at the Lindora American Legion Hall. Tickets are $15 each. It's BYOB and food will be available. Proceeds benefit Connecting to Tomorrow's mentoring programs. Get tickets online at c2t2017trivia.eventbrite.com. Oh, Riga is the capital of Latvia.
Trivia night is coming up, not this Saturday, but the following one, the 21st. It's a good time. We've had a couple of teams, at least from Butler Radio Group, ever since they started it a few years ago. And it's a lot of fun. Plus, raising some money for Connecting to Tomorrow. We'll talk with Mike Liebler from that group next week. In fact, I think a week from today, next Monday, Mike's going to be with us. So anyway, back to the Butlerite magazine. Anybody remember it? It was published, all the copies that I have are from the mid-1950s. And it was published, it must have been an adjunct of WISR because on the masthead, that's where it lists the address to send editorial mail. To the Butlerite, WISR building, Butler, PA. So it must have been an adjunct. I suspect one of the great ideas of the late, great Bob Kaufman, quite frankly, although I knew Bob and I never asked him about the Butler. I never heard of it before. But thanks to a listener, I've got several copies of it here. And I just got them. So all I've had time to do is just glance through a couple. And one thing that, and this was on the cover of the, when is this, January 1955. And on the cover it says one of the stories is pictures of Butler from 6 miles up. And I said, well, that ought to be interesting. So I opened it up and, there's one picture. Picture of Butler from 6 miles up, aerial photograph, and the date of the, even though the magazine was in the mid-50s, the aerial photograph is dated, and it's October of 1950, so that would be, 67 years ago, right now, exactly 67 years ago. So what I was interested in, first of all, And it's a pretty clear photograph by this. Black and white. And the resolution's not the best, but it's pretty good. My guess is it would be taken by the U.S. Geological Survey, but I don't know. There's no source given here. But the first thing I wanted to look at was, what did Butler look like before the Route 422 bypass went in? Okay? Because remember, I was built sometime in the 60s, mid-60s, I believe. And Route 422 went right through downtown Butler, along with Route 8 and 356 and some of the others that still do. So the aerial photograph shows it pretty clearly. And it just seems funny to see Butler without that bypass. You can, some things stand out. Main Street stands out. What else stands out? This was before the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers changed the course of the Conequenessing Creek. So as it came into town, the Conequenessing coming down from Oneida Lake and down into town past the old athletic field, which shows up very clearly in the aerial photograph. And then as it went under, the old South Main Street Viaduct took a pretty sharp bend and went into the island, into the west end of the city, and circled around, creating what we still know as the island, and then back out again into the current stream bed of the Conequenessing. So you can see very clearly what the Army Corps of Engineers did. And, I mean, it would still have been a big project, but they just went straight across. Instead of having the creek make a sharp bend into the west end, they just cut a new channel, so that it goes practically straight from there, right down behind what was then Pullman Standard, and then on down to Armco. But it's kind of funny to look at the island stands out and say, well, it was an island back then, or practically so. Also, of course, still in this photograph, the many, many buildings of Pullman Standard. And I never realized from the top, from 6 miles up, it was actually a series of rectangular buildings that were kind of stacked end on end. I didn't realize that. I thought it was, you know, maybe a couple of gargantuan buildings. And they were all connected. But they must have built them and, you know, just kept expanding the plant. Fascinating picture. It doesn't look like the wheel works is still here. I've had people tell me where that was. I'm not sure. As I said, the resolution of this photograph is not the best. I don't know. I'll tell you one thing that's still there. The old fairgrounds, where Butler Senior High School now is. And I had never seen this before. I knew that there was a racetrack up there, just as there is a harness track at the and a racetrack at the Butler Fairgrounds now out in Prospect, you know, with the grandstand and everything. I never realized how close the racetrack at the old fairgrounds was to Newcastle Road. It almost butts right up against it. Somehow I thought it was back, you know, back toward the stadium or somewhere like that. No, it was right up next to Newcastle Road. And, of course, no school buildings there. Butler High School was still downtown back in those days. Well, I'm going to peruse these magazines over the next few days. And if I find anything else that's interesting, I'll pass it on to you. But I've just had a chance when I picked that one up and I saw a photograph of Butler from 6 miles up. That's the first thing I wanted to look at. So, well, I guess we're just about out of time for open talk here today. We'll have plenty of that later in the week as we continue on with the It's Your Turn program. First of our guests is going to be joining us here in just a moment or so as we chat with Joe Navarro, author of 3 Minutes to Doomsday. 3 Minutes to Doomsday. One of our sponsors on the It's Your Turn program today is DBS Telecom, a telephone equipment dealer and a data network installer serving the Butler and Pittsburgh area, the whole tri-state, really. So what does DBS Telecommunications do? They sell, install, and repair telephones for your office, primarily installing commercial telephone and voicemail systems. They've been around, folks. They've been around for the past 32 years. We know them well because here at Butler Radio Network, we have utilized their expertise and service for many, many years. They specialize in phone systems, custom-designed networks, including fiber optics, high-quality hybrid digital telephone systems, 5-year guarantees, by the way, 5-year warranty. They also specialize in high-definition surveillance camera systems, very important in this day and age, multi-door entry access systems, and overhead commercial paging. They also provide cabling for voice, data, and cable television wiring in both industrial and commercial applications. Call them today. See what they can do for you. The phone number is 724-285-9088. 285-9088. DBS Telecommunications. They're on the web, too. dbs-tel.com.
Tanglewood, your hometown center for entertainment, presents an evening of comedy and mystery Saturday, October 21st with Dial M for Murder, presented by Pittsburgh acting group Mysteries Most Wanted. You may remember it as a crime mystery film directed by Alfred Hitchcock. Doors open at 5 o'clock. Buffet dinner by Chef George at 6, showtime at 7. Only $25 per person. As always, it's BYOB. Reserve your tickets for Dial M for Murder at Tanglewood Center, 287-0021.
Every once in a while, listeners, I get a chance to do an interview that I'm really anxious, and that's certainly the case today. If you're joining us a little bit late on It's Your Turn here on WISR today, my name is Dave Malarkey. Our next guest joins us by telephone. He is former special agent with the FBI, Joe Navarro, and he's written a pretty incredible book called 3 Minutes to Doomsday. First of all, Joe Navarro, nice to meet you. It's terrific to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Dave, it's a pleasure to be with you and on you, and your show with your listeners.
I got a review copy of your book a week or so ago in advance of our chat, and it's a page-turner. I had to pinch myself a couple of times because my favorite leisure time reading are spy novels and that sort of thing, action thrillers. And I had to keep pinching myself and remind me that your story is true. This is not fiction. This is not a novel. 3 Minutes to Doomsday actually happened, Joe.
It happened, and you're right. It's a page turner because it's a story that has never been told. It's never been revealed. It took me 20 plus years to get authority to talk about it. And it's the only time in American history where things could have gone downhill very fast.
A little bit, listeners, about our guest. Joe Navarro was a special agent with the FBI in the area of counterintelligence, and he wasn't there for a cup of coffee either. For nearly 25 years, he was a special agent, as well as a founding member of the FBI's elite National Security Division Behavioral Analysis Program. And what was the particular focus of that program, Joe? You were a founding member of it.
Well, it dawned us at one point that how do we spot a spy if they're not revealing who they are? Mm-hmm. If you see a diplomat and he says he's the third secretary here, and he's he or she is at the UN. How do we know that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, that they're not spying against us? And so we started looking at their behavior, and over time, we became experts at spotting telltale signs of them doing clandestine activity. And that's what the unit specialized in. Plus, once you grabbed one of these folks, then how do you get in their heads and get them to confess and reveal what they're up to? And that's what the unit, which at one time was classified secret, was responsible for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I'm talking with somebody like you, I always hope I don't accidentally, step into territory that I shouldn't be talking about or that I shouldn't be asking about. But does this unit still exist?
It still exists. It's really formed by the best of the best in the Bureau, and these are men and women who have dedicated themselves to working in the shadows, but finding America's enemies. And let me be clear about this. Nothing has really changed. America, in fact, probably has more enemies now, though less well-defined than during the Cold War.
Hmm. Let me catch up the people who may have joined us a little bit late here on the program. Our guest, Joe Navarro, former special agent with the FBI, author of a book just recently published, 3 Minutes to Doomsday. The subtitle, An Agent, a Traitor, and the Worst Espionage Breach in U.S. History. Obviously, you are the agent, Joe Navarro. Who was the traitor? Who was the guy you were investigating?
The bad guy turned out to be a fellow by the name of Roderick James Ramsey, who, the day that I met him, was driving a taxi cab. He had formerly served in the military. He was kicked out because he had failed the urinalysis test, probably one of the best things that ever happened, because he was kicked out before he could do even more damage. But he was a co-conspirator with two other individuals who were living in Germany, serving in Germany in the military, that had recruited him. And when I went out to talk to him, I actually went out to talk to him as a witness to someone who had lived on a military base where a guy by the name of Clyde Lee Conrad had been arrested. And when I mentioned the name of Clyde Lee Conrad, who had been arrested by the Germans for espionage, his cigarette shook in his hand.
Uh-huh.
And that little behavior told me that there was something wrong. And so that began our investigation of Roderick Ramsey.
Let's set the stage here. Time-wise, you're obviously now retired from the FBI. When was this all taking place? This was in the final days of the then Soviet Union, which added a whole other dimension to it, right, Joe?
Yes, correct. This was 1985 to 1988. We didn't know the Soviet menace was coming to an end. 89 was still way out in the distance. The nuclear scientists had declared that things were so bad that they had put the nuclear clock at 3 minutes to midnight, thus the name of the book. And, 64,000 tanks poised against West Germany by Soviet forces. Things were really very precarious. People in Eastern Europe were starting to express a desire to be unleashed from the Soviet boot, and it was making the Soviet leadership, and especially the KGB, which was responsible for security of the state, very nervous. And it was really a very, very scary time, and that's why I was desperate to bring this book out, to share with the readers exactly what was going on in this time period, because we came away unscathed, but we came very close to a mortal abyss.
Mm-hmm. And the fear was, and I'm truncating here, we may talk a little bit more about it as if time permits, but the fear was if some of the Soviet leadership realized that it was the end, that the Soviet Union was going down, that they may figure, what the heck, we have nothing to lose, and launch an attack. And then, so that was the fear about how close we were to doomsday, correct?
Dave, that's exactly right. It was one of those situations where, the tail wagging the dog was certainly plausible in that The KGB had actually, their officers had talked about, well, if we start a war, this will distract the population about, you know, freedom and so forth. And of course, you know, the United States, remember, we had a quarter of a million soldiers, men and women, serving across Western Europe, and not to mention the millions of Europeans that were living there. They would have all been placed in peril because these spies, these American traitors, had given away some of the top secrets, which I reveal in the book for the first time, with the authority that I finally got from the FBI.
So that kind of sets the stage time-wise, not only time-wise, mid and late 1980s, but sets the stage with regard to the situation, why it was such a perilous time, such a dangerous time. So you, and by the way, perhaps I've not mentioned quite enough about your work, your specialty work with the FBI. You were an expert in analyzing body language, and I probably could talk a lot more about that, but that's accurate, right, Joe? That was your thing.
That was my specialty, and it was something that I had been working on and honing on, you know, before it became popular to know about body language. I had been studying it for a very long time. And I have to say, it was probably the number one skill that I used in the FBI the most, was to read the thoughts, the fears, the intentions, the likes, dislikes of people in real time. And, you know, you as an interviewer, you can hear, you can sense fear in voices, you can detect hesitation, you can tell how bright somebody is by, or their erudition by the choice of words that they use and so forth. It's the same thing with body language, and I lucked out in this case that this traitor sitting in front of me, in front of his taxi cab, was smoking a cigarette, and just at the moment when I named used the name of the man that was arrested in Germany, his cigarette shook right at that moment. And it told me, there's something to this guy. You need to investigate this.
Now, this was, of course, I mean, you started out thinking this was just a routine assignment. This was in the late summer of 1988. And
yep.
This guy, I'm looking for his name here, Roderick James Ramsey. He, I mean, really was just a person of interest, right? That's all you knew at the time until you got that one clue.
It wasn't even a person of interest. We were ordered to interview anybody that had served at the base at Bad Kreuznach, which was in West Germany. A lot of soldiers had come and gone through there. I thought this interview was going to last 20, 30 minutes at the most. Basically, when did you serve there? What was your duty? Who did you know? Did you notice anything unusual? Little did I know that shaking cigarette would lead to a 10-year investigation and the final arrest of four spies. I never imagined that.
Wow. Listeners, we have to take a break. Fortunately, we've got a few more minutes that we can chat with Joe. We'll pick up the story when we come back here on It's Your Turn on WISR, and we will be back right after these words.
If you're a dog person, you know how much a dog means in your life. You know how your dog gives you unrestricted love and affection and joy. You also know that the dog can be so comforting at just the right time when you need to be comforted. That's why Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler has O'Shea on their care team. O'Shea is there to provide the comfort and companionship that really helps, but she's only there at your request. Come in and meet O'Shea. You'll see why so many folks want her at the funeral. She creates a calming atmosphere. And while you're here, ask about our unique services, our competitive costs, our cremation program. Call us at 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or visit our website at www.thompson-miller.com. Thompson Miller Funeral Home at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, time-honored excellence.
Welcome back. Joining us a little bit late, no problem. I'm Dave Malarkey, and on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, we're chatting with the former special agent of the FBI, Joe Navarro, author of 3 Minutes to Doomsday, an agent, a traitor, and the worst espionage breach in U.S. history. And I remind especially people who are joining us late, this is not a spy novel. This is true spy. This actually happened. So my question is, you go back to the office or to your superiors after this initial interview with Roderick James Ramsey. Did you then express to your boss that, I don't know, this guy might be a little bit shaky, maybe we better expand our investigation here? How did that happen, Joe?
Well, Dave, that is a key question, because I'm not sure in today's environment I could get away with what I did. But I went back to my supervisor and I said, look, I know this was just a cursory interview, but I think this individual is involved. And my supervisor wisely asked, what are you basing this on? What did he say? And I said, it's not what he said. It's that his cigarette shook. Not once, not twice, three times. Every time I mentioned the name of the man that had been arrested by the Germans, and my supervisor looked at me and he said, "Are you trying to get me fired? Can you imagine me testifying before Congress that we interviewed conducted an investigation based on a shaking cigarette?" And I said, no, you know, there's really something to this. At that point, I'd been studying nonverbals for a very long time, and I said, there's something wrong here. And he said, I'll tell you what, go talk to him again tomorrow and just ask him a few more questions and see what you get. And that second interview led to a third, and in the end, we conducted 42 interviews. The longest was 12 hours, and it spanned over a year and a half, and it was a revelation to learn what had been betrayed.
And of course, much more came out, which made this guy and this investigation all the more critical. Ramsey guy, Roderick James Ramsey, turned out to have the second highest IQ ever recorded by the U.S. Army. That would certainly be a red flag, wouldn't it, Joe?
Well, it would, you know, if somebody had told me, well, you got to talk to this really bright guy, and as one colonel put it, scary bright, I would have said, find somebody else. But it was a challenge because, you know, he thought that he could outmaneuver us, that he could talk his way out of anything. He knew that the evidence, I mean, think about it. You know, if you rob a bank, the evidence is right here in the city, at the bank. All the evidence of espionage was in the hands of the Russians, and the Russians weren't about to help the United States. So it was a cat and mouse game to get him not so much to make a confession, but to get enough admissions, one peck at a time, to where we could put a case together, and that's what took us so long. But in the end, what we learned was unprecedented as far as the betrayal to the United States.
This guy also, it turns out, you learned, had a photographic memory. So even sometimes without taking pictures, he was able to soak up top secret information. And then what did he do? Did he sell this stuff to the Soviets? Did he make money on the deal?
So the whole enterprise was about funneling secrets through the Hungarian intelligence service to the Soviets, and it was all for money. The big money makers in this were the people that preceded him, a man by the name of Zoltán Szabó and Clyde Conrad that were first arrested, one of them in Germany. But the way they did it was, think about the technology back in 88, 85. They would have to use 35-millimeter camera, as slow as that is, to take one picture at a time, and load up the film and put it in canisters that were where they could hide it, and then it was transported to Austria, and then from there to Hungary. Video taping had just come on, and Ramsey's bright idea, using that keen intellect, was to begin to use video recorders, using Disney tapes of movies to record over and transmit information that way. But it was the quality of the material that the Soviets were getting that was really frightening.
And you had to, the whole time, 40 interviews, you had to keep him from getting too suspicious, Joe?
Dave, that is exactly what I had to do. Imagine this. He could have asked for an attorney at any time, and we would have had to terminate the interview. We had to keep this facade going where, in essence, I had to pretend that I was just curious about the events that had taken place in Germany, and he was trying to maneuver around me, knowing that I couldn't get a hold of the evidence. And so over time, we were able to get enough admissions from him. I'll give you an example. Instead of asking him, well, how much money, you know, were you getting or spending, we would talk about how much food costs, how much cars cost, gasoline, and, you know, how much he was spending on alcohol and drugs and partying. And so we would turn that over to an accountant who would say, look, he's earning $100-something a month from the Army. He's spending over $1,100 a week. There's something wrong here.
Folks, the methodology that Joe Navarro uses in his book 3 Minutes to Doomsday, as he tells this story, it is day by day, edge of your seat. The best thing I can compare to recently would be Argo, the story of the Iranian hostage crisis, which was turned into a terrific movie by George Clooney, and I understand he's interested in your book, Joe.
He was interested enough, Dave, that he bought the rights to it, and it has that fast pace of Argo. But, you know, unlike Argo, where, you know, we had the lives of, I believe, six or eight Canadian officers or Americans that were under threat. These guys, these spies, Rod Ramsey, had placed Western Europe right at the edge of an abyss because he had betrayed the secrets that would have allowed the Western powers to defend ourselves, and he betrayed that ability.
Our time begins to run very short here. Obviously, the Soviet Union is gone now. It's Russia. But Vladimir Putin is in command. He's a former KGB guy. Are you still concerned today about remnants of the Soviet leadership in Russia today?
Absolutely. The nursery where Putin was reared, babied, and nurtured was the KGB. And the KGB promotes people based on their ruthlessness. I think we have to look at Russia for what Putin has turned it into, which is in some ways still paranoid about the West, paranoid that the West is once again thinking about invading 11 time zones. The West has no interest in any hostile action, and yet they perceive America as its number one enemy, and they will still use any means, be it espionage, influence, disinformation. And in my view, and from talking to defectors, nothing has changed. Absolutely nothing has changed.
You said it took you a while to bring this book to fruition. Did you have to get some clearances or some checks on the Joe or anything like that?
David, it's a good question. What the reader will find, is the Bureau eventually agreed to have me publish this. It took a while. And what the reader will find is beyond how body language was used, beyond the interview techniques and the subtleties and so forth, it was, I also wanted the American public to look at the personalities that were involved, both the agents. The book isn't really about myself. It's about everybody that I worked with and the bad guys in this. I mean, you're talking the people that hurt this country were soldiers. And I think when the American public realizes that we have to be careful about who we trust and what we do, and that a few individuals can hurt us. So it was worth the wait, but I think the reader will find it that for the first time, the name of documents that went over, what damage those documents did, the testimony of at two trials, none of this has been seen before.
Wow, one of my favorite parts of NCIS is when Jethro Gibbs is interviewing those guys in the room, and everybody else is watching through the glass. And now here it is in real life. For goodness sakes, not a fictionalized story. Joe Navarro, our guest, former special FBI agent, his shocking inside account of spearheading an investigation into the worst espionage breach in U.S. history. The title of the book is 3 Minutes to Doomsday. Available at local booksellers, online places, I would assume, Joe, everywhere we get books these days?
Absolutely, and I encourage everybody to go to your local bookstore and check it out there first.
Joe, great to talk with you today. I really enjoyed it. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Dave. All the best.
Sure. So long now. Well, that's pretty good stuff. Do you like spy thrillers? I have since I was a kid, really. Every once in a while, I'll even reread one from years ago. I was reading Day of the Jackal a few weeks back, and that one goes back, I don't know, 25, 30 years maybe. But this one is not a spy novel. It's a true story. Yeah. Yeah. 3 Minutes to Doomsday by Joe Navarro. Nice to talk with him on the program today. We're not done today. We still have more. We'll be chatting in just a couple of minutes with our final guest of the day, and that's Faith Thomas. By the way, we were discussing that aerial photograph when we were still doing open talk earlier on the program today, and I had mentioned that I need to get out my magnifying glass and see if the wheel works was still there. I think that photograph, I put it away. I think it was dated it was October 1950. So 67 years ago today. We had a caller off the air who said she might have more information on that. So hopefully we'll talk to her a little bit later in the week when we have open talk again. Okay, you can very clearly see, obviously, the Pullman Standard plant from that aerial photograph, but I'm just not sure on the wheel works, which is, I think, where they made wheels for railroad cars. Yeah, wheel works. We continued to have that, by the way, even up until not all that long ago in Butler, in a variety of different places, where they were making wheels and then axles for rail cars, even after the Pullman plant went out of business. Okay, well, that's for a later day. I want to tell you about one of our sponsors on the program today, and it's one of my favorite places in Butler. It's Cummings Candy and Coffee Shop. And, of course, I don't have to tell you where they are, I hope. North Main Street, downtown. You may not know that there are now 3 locations of Cummings, though. Mm-hmm. Not just Main Street, but Butler Memorial Hospital. They've had service there for some years. And there's the new Cummings West on Route 68 Evans City Road, right on the outskirts of town, right out near the farm show. Cummings West. They're open 7 days a week. And the delicious coffee, the delicious candies. And right now, with the holidays just around the corner, you realize this is the second week of October, folks. At Cummings, they offer corporate orders of custom gift boxes to give to clients. And I've done this. You can choose from an assortment of different, very unique gifts. Chocolate-covered potato chips are my favorite. For a lot of people have never heard of them. And they're just melting your mouth. Delicious. They also have chocolate-covered pretzels the graham crackers and cherry cordials. Great idea for gifts, you know, for the coming holiday season, clients, or for anybody for that matter. Why not add a half-pound bag of Butler's own proprietary blend of coffee, the Main Street Roast? Oh, can't you almost smell that aroma? Which you notice as soon as you step into Cummings. It's like stepping back in time. They've been there for, well, at that location for about 100 years. They've been in Butler since 1905, well over 100 years. Call Barry Cummings for information about corporate orders, 724-287-3287, 287-3287. Oh, and their peanut brittle is now available. That's not all year round. It's a seasonal thing, and they've got it right now. And oh my, there are people that just go crazy. I'm one of them, and I'm not a big peanut brittle fan. Cummings peanut brittle, different story. Ask for it. Cummings, Main Street downtown, Butler Memorial Hospital, and Cummings West on Route 68, open 7 days a week. A Butler institution, Cummings Candy and Coffee, since 1905. Coming up in just a moment, we'll be saying hello to our final guest on the program. I think we have one quick message before that, right? And then we'll be chatting with Faith Thomas about type 2 diabetes in kids, young kids. I was not aware that this was starting to become a real problem. We'll talk about it with Faith Thomas and how you might help to prevent it in kids in your family. That's coming up next on It's Your Turn on WISR. And please plan to be with us tomorrow. We'll be talking with Courtney Riffer tomorrow from the Victim Outreach Intervention Center. This is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, the month of October. And we'll be talking, among other things, about abuse in dating. Unfortunately, it happens a lot. And Voice is working to try to make people aware of that, and I've got programs going on the college campuses here locally, and we'll talk about that with Courtney tomorrow. Okay, quick break, and then Faith Thomas here on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn on WISR.
Looking for a way to make your company's benefit package a little more competitive? Here's one that's so easy, more than 130 local organizations and businesses have added it to their programs. Membership in Armco Credit Union. At Armco Credit Union, your employees will have access to the best loan rates and more free banking services, while direct deposit and payroll deduction options make it convenient for both of you. And best of all, it doesn't cost you a thing. Learn more at armcocu.com or by calling 284-2020. Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and is insured by NCUA.
Listeners, we're going to be talking on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. And by the way, if you're just joining us, my name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest is Faith Thomas. She joins us by telephone. We're going to be talking about an interesting children's book that deals with type 2 diabetes. And the title of the book is Being the Best You. First of all, Faith Thomas, nice to meet you. Nice to be able to chat with you for a few minutes here today.
Thank you for having me.
You talk about diabetes, type 2 diabetes in children, but wait a minute, Faith Thomas, I thought type 2 diabetes was in adults. Is that happening in kids now?
Yes, it's happening in kids as well.
Wow. Is this something new here in our American society these days? I mean, that wasn't the case before, right?
No, it really wasn't. I think more so the foods that we're eating.
Ah, okay. You have
the artificial flavors and different things like that.
You have worked as a daycare provider for quite a few years now, over a decade. So I guess you've seen a number of kids with type 2 diabetes in the course of your work.
Yes. And that's what is one of the reasons why I'm writing this book.
Now, is it designed for parents to read to their kids, or is it aimed at parents? I'm a little unclear on that. Can you explain it for me, Faith?
Yeah, it's important that parents begin to read to their kids and like make them knowledgeable about what's going on with food and what they're eating, and just like make sure that what they're doing is something that is healthy.
Mm-hmm. And it's never too early to start this, even with very young children?
No, it's never too early. You want to make sure that you're not putting them on a diet, but you always want to make sure that they're having their protein and their vegetables and fruits and, of course, their grains.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about the structure of your story, being the best you. You create an imaginary character, right? His name is Darwin. Who's he?
Well, actually, that's my son.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Actually, that's my son, and throughout the story, he's trying to find his way. He's trying to find his way on what he's good at, and while he's doing it, he's discovering all the great things that he's good at, and his mom and his dad helps him point out that he's wonderful. He shouldn't want to be like any of his friends or like anyone else, that he is great within himself. And while he's discovering this, he's noticing what diabetes is. He discovers what it is and why he should eat healthy and drink water and take care of himself.
His mother has diabetes?
His grandmother.
Grandmother? I see. Is that also the case in real life, Faith?
Yes.
Okay.
This is a real life story. And I just want him to understand, if you take care of yourself at an early age, you can prevent some of the things from happening to you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A little bit, listeners, about our guest, Faith Thomas. I mentioned she's an experienced daycare owner. She lives in the Washington, D.C. area. Obviously has children. In fact, I think we've heard a couple of them in the background as we chat. That's just fine.
I'm sorry. I have a one-year-old, a three-year-old, and a five-year-old.
Oh, please. That's wonderful. So don't worry about a little background noise. That's terrific. While you have been involved in your daycare, is that when you started writing children's books, or had you been doing that before, Faith?
Yes. I decided to start writing books because we go to the library a lot, and we read like a lot of Disney books and a lot of books about trains and books about wolves and different things like that. I wanted to write a book based on how we can change our health and start eating healthier. And I wanted to write a book where he can look back and say, you know what, as a kid, I wanted to be a doctor, and I really worked hard. And I wanted him to understand the concept of loving yourself, and your self-esteem is with good habits and preparation.
Mm-hmm. So it's not, because some of our listeners might think, wow, gosh, daycare might be a little bit too early to start exploring things like this, healthy eating. You've even had some experience in introducing young children, very young children, to foreign language, have you not?
Yes. You should start as early as possible. This is the new generation. These kids are extremely intelligent. They can go and grab an iPad and use all the apps on iPads. So anything that you introduce to these kids is just, you never know what you're going to get out of them, because they're just that smart. That's how intelligent they are.
We'll take a quick break. We have a couple more minutes, listeners, that we're able to chat with Faith Thomas, author of Being the Best You. By the way, before we break here, Faith, is your book available online or in the usual place?
Yes, you can go to Amazon. You can go to Barnes & Noble. This book, you can go to Faith Thomas at Arthur.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to Google and Google it. And it's Faith with a Y, F-A-Y-T-H, Thomas, T-H-O-M-A-S.
We'll be back to talk more with Faith Thomas, author of Being the Best You. She's with us here on It's Your Turn on WISR. Back right after these words. One of our sponsors on the program today, Gone Postal Butler. Have you heard about this operation? Wow, it's pretty neat. Now, they're located on Newcastle Road, right behind King's and Villa Grande restaurants, right there in the Shockey Mini Storage area. Gone Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. What do? Well, they package your items for shipping. which can be a real convenience. Whether you've got one package, or one large package, or a whole bunch of packages, they get it ready to go for you. And you can ship it any way you want. FedEx, UPS, U.S. Postal Service, your choice. Other services offered to go on Postal Butler include copying, scanning, faxing. They have mailbox rentals, custom boxes, pick up a greeting card. They have an official notary. Sometimes you need that when you're mailing something out, right? Right. You can even grab a lottery ticket while you're there. 140 Shockey Lane, right behind Kings and Villa Grande. That's right off Newcastle Road. It's not far from the Butler High School entrance. It's in the Shockey Mini Storage. Here's their phone number. Call them. Find out what else they can do for you. 724-841-0044. 724-841-0044. Go on Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick two is 9494. Pick three is 538, 538. The pick four, 3423. The pick five, 40967. The wild ball for each of those is two. And the treasure hunt is 5, 18, 22, 28, and 29. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $80,000.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Welcome back. We're talking with Faith Thomas. She is an experienced daycare owner. She's also written a line of books that help to educate children with fun stories. And the one we're talking about right now is Being the Best You. It's a children's book that deals with type 2 diabetes. So if parents are worried about this, do you have any tips, Faith Thomas, about what parents should offer young children, even little kids, to eat?
Yes, I recommend gardening and start planting your own fruits and vegetables in smoothies. And in the smoothie, just put more fruits and make it fun. Start preparing meals with your kids so they understand what's going in, the ingredients, and you also want to go to the stores with your kids and read the labels.
Okay.
You know, when you're young and you start doing things at a young age, when you grow up, you begin to do that as well. Less preservatives, less fast foods, less salty foods, more water.
So from what I've been reading, and actually from a number of people that I've interviewed, sugar has been identified as a real evil, too much sugar in our diets. Do you have any suggestions on how to reduce the amount of sugar that young kids are eating? Because they gobble anything with sugar in it, they gobble it up like it's the end of the world.
Of course, it tastes well. But we have to give our kids the understanding that natural fruits and vegetables is really good for you. So you plan out, you go on recipes, and you put in what you like, but you make it healthy, and you guys do it from home, so then you get less sugar and salts and all the stuff that, you know, run your blood pressure up when you get older, you know.
Are there places where you can find recipes for making, because a lot of parents, you know, they like to do their own baking and cooking, but are there places where you can find healthy recipes?
Yeah, I like to go to Google and look up different soups. I recommend you know, soups, less salt. Try to stay away from that. And I just go to Google and put in whatever I have a taste for. And I look and I prepare it myself so I know what's going in there. Try to make sure it has lots of ranges of colors. And you know, you're having your broccoli and your cauliflower, your onions, and some beans. And, you know, if you choose, you can have chicken or no chicken. And, you know, you can make it healthy, make it taste well. And I like a little salsa with mine because it gives it, like, a little more of a
You recommend getting the kids involved in meal preparation, Faith Thomas. How do you do that? How do you do that?
Like, you know, if we're having pasta, I'll make the pasta, and I'm like, okay, what do you want to put in your pasta? And then I'll have all these different things. I'll have some, you know, I'll have some cheese right here. I'll have some olives, some bell peppers, red bell peppers, and broccoli, and they're just like, you know, they're picking and choosing what they want, and I make it fun where they can, you know, they can put their hands in it. We wash our hands first, and they're adding to their little pasta dish, and they get really happy. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, Mom, this is good.
So they get the idea that they're really involved in helping to make the meal and making the choices, but you're kind of guiding them a little bit toward what's a what's a healthy choice and what's not. Huh?
And that's all this book is about. It's molding them for life, molding them for understanding at an early age how, you know, you need to start thinking about what you want to do with your life. How are you going to get there? What choices are you going to make? You know, and you have to make the right choice if you want to be healthy in the future, if you want to have a great life. You know, a great life is all about preparation, meal prepping, and just having fun while doing it with the family. And instead of watching TV and playing video games, we're getting out playing dodgeball. This is all about family, teamwork, and building.
You mentioned something earlier that I wanted to expand on for a minute here before we run out of time. You mentioned parents reading to their children and reading with their children. Is that still important in today's society, Faith Thomas?
That is very important. You know, you have to read with them, and then sometimes you're pointing out different things that you read about, and you guys, you're getting different views. Every time you read a book, sometimes you're getting more information, and it's great that you're doing it with your kids because you guys are spending time together, and you're learning from each other. And a lot of times our kids are so intelligent, I keep bringing that up, they're teaching us something new. The way that they're thinking, their imagination is taking us on a whirlwind, and it's great.
Is it okay to use your book as a bedtime story, or do you think it would be more advisable to use it earlier in the day as opposed to when kids are maybe getting ready to nod off?
You know what? It's great any time of the day to read this book because at night they're going to go to sleep with a great imagination thinking about, oh, wow, I could be a doctor, or I could be, you know, great, or I can, you know, have this, you know, wonderful family when I grow up. Or, you know, during the day, they're like, oh, you know what? I don't want to be like my friend anymore during the day. I want to be like me. Hmm. You know, any time of the day, this book is great to read, great for understanding, and great just guide to help you already impact the great, you know, childhood.
Tell us a little bit about the book itself, Being the Best You. Is it are there illustrations or pictures in it?
Yes, great pictures. I really spent a lot of time making sure that these pictures looked a lot like our family. And this book is just a great positive concept on taking good care of yourself and just molding our kids into being the best you, and, you know, eating correctly, you know, understanding what diabetes is, and just, you know, giving structure and guidance throughout the book, and really understanding how family-based this book is.
Have you written it at such a level that as little kids begin to read, as they turn into young readers, that they'll be able to follow along, pick out some words even?
Yes, I try to keep it where everyone could understand, from kids to adults. It's an easy read. It's something that all kids would enjoy and have fun with.
If you're looking for Faith Thomas online, listeners, keep in mind her first name is spelled with a Y and not an I. It's F-A-Y-T-H, Faith Thomas. And her latest book is called Being the Best You. Do you have a website where some of your earlier stories are available, Faith?
Yes. Yes, you can go to faiththomas.com, or you can go to faithArthur.com. You can go to Ex Libris, and you can go to Amazon once again, or Barnes & Noble's.
Thanks for talking with us, Faith. It's nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sure. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Coming up on tomorrow's It's Your Turn program, this is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, the month of October. We'll talk with Courtney Riffer from the Victim Outreach Intervention.